So we are on Cortez Summit Days. We'll finish today back in Japan. There's not too much interruption. We're holding 8 or 9 lines from the top. Line begins live. Yeah, 9 lines from the top. Okay. We were in the middle of discussing the question. Now, our Mishnah had said that if a Kohen worships Avodah Zarah, that he's not allowed to serve in the Beit Hamikdash anymore. And we were discussing the details about it. We started by saying that if he shechted a korban for Avodah Zarah, that in and of itself does not necessarily pass for him, because it's not shiurus, it's not a service in the Beit Hamikdash, which fits a kesher of Zarah. Then we started talking about, we had a couple of cases. One of us is we said that it's not shiurus in the Beit Hamikdash, and therefore it's not considered part of yeshurus through oisim lefnei gululei.
Yeah, but what happens to an
Yisrael? What happens to an Yisrael? We're talking about a Kohen.
I know we're talking about a Kohen, but if an
Yisrael... So if he's chayv, it means if he did it, he can't serve the mezid, he's chayv skill, or the shogig, he's chayv a chatas, same as any other.
So
he's going to be chayv a chatas. We said that he can bring his own chatas. That's what we were discussing yesterday. Okay. So then we started talking about what if he did something that's an actual avoider, such as drisa, that he did that, the shogig. So Rav Nachman has said it's okay, he can still serve in the Beit Hamikdash. Rav Shesha says that not. Then we said, what about if he did shchita, but he did mezid? So Rav Nachman said that when we said originally that if he does shchita, he's still kosher, that means either b'shergig or b'mezid, it doesn't matter. And Rav Shesha said, no, it's only dafka if he did it b'shergig. If it's b'mezid, then he's kosher. So now it's third case. Hishtach v'lavod k'chol. So now forget about shchita. Now another case. Suppose a Kohen bowed down to Avodah Zarah. Again, Rav Nachman on the Korban Reach Nechayach, but Rav Shesha on the Korban Reach Nechayach. Same machloitas, although here we're not talking about the Shogid versus the Mezid, here we're just talking about is his Shtachaba enough to pass for him? Basically, the question is, on the one hand, his Shtachaba is not a Shirus, on the other hand, because it's not one of the Avodas in the Beit Hamikdash, on the other hand, it is obeisance to Avodah Zarah. Another case, Hoidol Avodah Sechavim, what if he acknowledged Avodah Zarah? He says here, Keliyata. He acknowledges that it is his deity. Same thing. Rav Nachman Amar Korban Reach Nechayach. Rav Nachman says his korban is still acceptable. That's not enough to pass on him. But Rav Shesha Amar Ein Korban Reach Nechayach, and Rav Shesha says that not. So we have four cases where they're arguing about. One where he did zrika, whether b'shergig or b'mezid. One where he did zrika, whether b'shergig or b'mezid. A second one where he did shchita, b'mezid, the shogig, everybody agrees he's still okay. A third one where he bowed to it, and a fourth one where he acknowledged it. Here, by the way, the Gemara is not making a distinction between the shogig or b'mezid, but Rambam actually paskins that when it comes to ishtachava, he paskins like Rishesh in all four of these cases, like we said yesterday, but he paskins by ishtachava and by hojoya that it is actually, even if it was the shogig. But unlike shchita, which we said has to be b'mezid to paskal him, his shachava and hejoya can even be if it was b'shogig, which are Chof Chaim and other Achronim wonder about that. Why should his shachavaya and hejoya be stronger than shchita? Okay, I mean hejoya means he says keliyata. He says to the idol, you're my whatever. Okay, anyway, what's shchita? The Gemara says we need now. Why do we need all four cases for them to be arguing? Sort of once we could have the machlokas in one case and we could deduce from the others. No. The Iyashmin and Hachkamaisa, if we were only told the first case involving Zrika, you would say, by he called Rav Sheshes, you know why Rav Sheshes is saying over there being machmer on him, that he's possible as a that it ain't korban reach nechayah, mishum da'ovid le'shirus. After all, he did something which is a shirus in the Vesmetash. And the prophet says, you show to, he did Zrika, he sprinkled blood of a korban in front of the Getchke. Aval shchita, deloy obed leshirus. But shchita, after all, he didn't actually do any shirus. We established yesterday, shchita is kshedah bazar. It's not a real avoider in that sense. So maybe not. Aim a moedelay le Rav Nachman. Maybe he would agree with Rav Nachman that even if he did it b'mezid, it shouldn't be enough to disqualify him. Okay, so therefore we needed the second machlokes about shchita because we couldn't have learned it from Zirka. Then the iashmin and shchita. If then we were told the second machlokes of shchita, you would say, okay, fine, mishum da avod le'avoda. Okay, you know why you're tackling him because he actually did an avoda. Okay, even you're going to argue shchita is not a shirus, but it still is an avoda. As the Gemara had said at the top of the Amud, we learned at the end yesterday, nasa mishareis la'avoda sechavim. Relative to avoda zara, it is a shirus. Relative to the dinim in the Beit Hamikdash, it's not because shchita kshedah b'zara, but relative to avoda zara, he did an actual act of avodah. He became meshoreh. He became the term that Rambam uses is like a koimer. He became like a priest of avodah zarah by shechting a korban. So therefore, you could argue that's reason enough to possible him, even if it was b'shoydig, as Rav Sheshet says. Aval hishtachva, but if he only bowed to the getchka, delay ovid le avoida, where after all, he didn't do any kind of avoida, it's not one of the four avoidas, and it's not really a koimer lavidus kachavim, he's not really doing an actual...
That avodazara includes ishtachavos?
Yeah, because keep in mind, we learned in Sanhedrin that you have four actions plus one verbiage, keliata, that apply across the board to all avodazaras, whether it's the derech to worship him that way or not. Zibruach, the kitter, the nisuch, the ishtachavos. So yes, whether this Avodah Zarah is normally worshipped at Shachavah or not, either way, Shachavah applies there. So, yeah. Okay, so we would think maybe Shachavah, he didn't actually do an Avodah, he didn't actually do a tangible act. Amaloi, so you'd think maybe not.
But alone is Avodah, you bow down to
it. No, but it is and it isn't. I mean, right, I mean, it is obviously he's showing respect for it by bowing down, I mean, but on the other hand, he's not taking an animal and shechting it or doing something tangible in front of it. So you could argue maybe Amaloi, maybe not, so therefore we needed that third machlokas. The Yeshman and Ishtachavah, and then if we only had Ishtachavah, you would say, okay, we should do other like Maisa, fine, but the bottom line, he did some kind of Maisa. He did get down onto the floor.
Yeah.
Aval hoja, but just saying keliata, the burda ba'alma, where he said something, talk is cheap, amalo, you think that's not enough to pass one?
Not a maise?
I mean, to a certain extent, we say Akima's supposed to have a maise, but still, it's a maise garua at best. It's not a real full-fledged maise, like actually getting down on the floor, you know? So Emelo, you would think not. Suicha, and therefore we needed to be told that Rav Sheshet is machmer in all four cases. And of course the opposite is true also. If we only had the case of Hoja, we would think only there is a machmer maple. We would know that he's also makel by Shtachabah. If we knew by Shtachabah, we would know he's also makel by Shchita and so forth. So therefore, we need all four. So therefore we need all four machlokes tonight. Then we said in the Mishnah, the Ein Sarach, so that's the bottom line then, is again, the halacha is that if the Kohen did Now, halacha is if the Kohen did shchita b'mezid, or any of these other three things, whether shergig or b'mezid, zrika, or hishtachavah, or saying keliata, that's it. He's disqualified from ever serving as a Kohen again.
But he's not
chayav koros. He's not chayav koros because he's not b'mezid. He did a b'mezid, he's chayav koros. There was a skilla, as the case may be. If he did it for shergig, he'd be chayav koros. And we discussed yesterday also the whole issue of does this apply to duchening, where the Rambam holds that yes, that the Rambam and the Sefer Vehizer from the Goyim hold that yes, a Kohen who worshipped Avodah Zarah, even if he does Teshuva afterwards, it is possible to duchen, and the Rambam says even if it was Boinus, Rashi says no, and in fact the Rambam passed in that way, and that is the bottom line halacha. A Kohen Shehemir did Teshuva, is able to duchen again. Either Boinus or Veshoker, even Bemezin. Even Mezid, as long as he did Torah. Then we said in the mission of the Ein Sarach Loim of Dabar Achva Kola, we said that the Kohenim who served in Beis Chonya, which we're going to discuss now, how Beis Chonya came to be built, are not allowed to serve in the Beis Mikdash anymore. And the mission had said, needless to say, if they serve Dabar Achva, meaning Avodah Zarah, Sigmar points out, Midakama Ein Sarach Loim of Dabar Achva. So what is the mission telling us? If they served in Beis Chonya, and how much more, and needless to say, if they worshipped Avodah Zarah, in that case, that implies, Mikhlal, the Beis Chonya lava Avodah Sechav. That implies that Beis Chonya is not actually a place where they worship Avodah Zarah, which is a discussion now that we're going to have, whether it was. Our Mishnah seems to be implying that it's not, because otherwise there's no Ve'ein Sarach Lema, Deva Acher. It is exactly the same thing. Therefore,
yes, because they can
resume. So it would be possible for a different reason. It's possible because of Chut Echut, as we're going to discuss.
But not
Avodah Zarah, that's the point. Tanya, really, whatever, Commander Omar, Beis Chonya Lava Avodah Sechavim Hu. So indeed, our Mishnah goes like the opinion of the Tanya who says that Beis Chonya is not a place of Avodah Zarah. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, so what's the whole story, how the place came to be built, and what was it? Was it a place of Avodah Zarah? The story starts like this. Oysa Shana Shemesh Shimon HaTzadik, the year that Shimon HaTzadik passed away, he'd been Kohen Gadol for 40 years, Omar Lahen, he says to the people, he says to the Chachamim, whatever, Shana Zuhu Met, this year he, meaning I, am going to die. Omar Lahen Yunayinati, this is after he had come out, after he had done the Avodah of Yom Kippur. That year, at the end of Yom Kippur, he tells them, I know that this year I'm going to die. Omar Lahen Yunayinati, there, to ask him, how do you know? Omar Lahen, he says, like, Kol Yom Kippurim Nizdamen Li Zokinachad, every Yom Kippur, when I went into the Kodesh Kedoshim to do the Avodah, they would meet up with me an old person, Lavush Levonim, and we'll talk in a second, who's nobody else is allowed to be in there, but hold on. Lovish Levonim Vinis Akas Levonim. He's usually dressed in white and wrapped in a white robe around that, which is a sign of Simcha. So in those days, you wore white clothes for Simcha. Even closer to our times, in Abayim, for example, in earlier generations, you used to wear white. That's why the famous picture of the Tzemach Tzedek has him in white, because a goy drew it on Shabbos. So he peeked in through the window when the Tzemach Tzedek was saying Siddur on Shabbos, and then memorized what the Tzemach Tzedek looked like, and then went home and drew the picture. I don't know when. It was actually the original picture. He got a couple of details wrong. He had the sefer backwards. He had the Tzemach Tzedek, the kapota button left over right. Because he doesn't know these nuances. But whatever. Anyway. And then in the picture, as they usually publish it nowadays, they flipped it. They flipped it so that everything looks correct. Okay. Anyway. So this person is dressed and wrapped in white as a sign of Simcha. The nichnasi miviyata, and every time he would come with me into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he would come out with me. But this year, I saw this old man, this time he was dressed in black and wrapped in black as a sign of Avelu. And he went in with me and did not come out with me. So therefore I realized that this year is different, and I realized that he's in Avelu because I'm going to pass away shortly. Now, you're asking Malachim aren't, and nobody else is allowed to be in there, even Malachim. Tosis brings over from the Yerushalmi. What do you mean? Malachim aren't supposed to be in there. And the answer is that it may have been the Shechina. That it may have been the Shechina itself, that appearing in the form of a person that accompanied him. You have other... The Shechina is not an angel. The Shechina is a level of Hashem's presence. It's a certain level of Elokus. It's a certain level of Elokus that can be perceived. Now, you have other examples of it. You have other examples where the Shechina is able to be perceived in a human form. You have the Nevuahs of Yeshaya and Yechezkel, for example. Roisi es Hashem Yosha Matite Ron Benisa, right? And, by Yechezkel. All of the audio, Kimare, Adam, Musa, Al Musa, Kise,
Okay.
He has to be informed. He wanted to look like this. He can know to prepare for it. Like this, he can know to prepare the people for it.
I don't think he could have managed to get that.
Okay.
But
in general, he wasn't told the exact day. He just knows it's sometime this year. The same way as Davar HaMelech was told it's going to be on a Shabbat, but he doesn't know which Shabbat. The same way as Shimon HaTzadik is told it's going to be this year, but he doesn't know what day. Okay. La'acha rego, after Sukkot, choloshiv afyomim, it was 6 to 7 days, umes, and then he passed away. And at that point, after he passed away, v'nimnu echav ha-koyinim l'vorech b'shem. From then on, his fellow koyinim held themselves back from doing zirkas koyinim, from duchening, using the shem ha-mefurish. For a variety of reasons. There's a number of different reasons that are given for it. First of all, you have one of the Mefarshim, the Rid in Yuma, says it doesn't mean they stop using the Shein Ben Dalet. That's the Gemara tells us in Sota, you have to use in the Bet Mikdash. It means up until then they'd use the Shein Mem Beis, Hashem's name of 42 letters. Now instead they sort of downgraded to the 4-letter name. Okay, so what's the reason? So what's the reason behind it? Up until that point, they were allowed to do it. What's the reason? So there are a couple of reasons given. Tosfos over there, Tosfos in Sota, on that sugya of Birkas Koyanim, says, because you only say Hashem's name where the Shechina is revealed. After Shimon HaTzadik passed away, the Shechina is not revealed in the Beit Mikdash to the same extent anymore. Therefore, they couldn't be saying it anymore.
The Shechina was revealed,
it was on a higher level in the first Beit Mikdash. Higher in the second, definitely. That's why you have the five things missing in the second one, including the Urim V'Thummim. But Shimon HaTzadik himself is at the beginning of the second Beit Mikdash. But still, in his times, there was still a higher level of Gilui Shechina in the Beit Mikdash than there was afterwards, and therefore the Kohanim were sensitive to that, and therefore they stopped using. That's one reason. Another reason that Rambam gives a reason is because they're afraid that people are going to learn it and use it for and misuse it or for improper purposes or misunderstand that they think they know the nature of Hashem from it or whatever, when really they don't.
Any inference from that story that the Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed?
No, Shimon HaTzadik is near the beginning of the second Beit HaMikdash. The second Beit HaMikdash still stood for another 300 odd years. But still, it went down a level after he passed away. All right, let's go on. The Shas Pkidot, when Shimon HaTzadik was about to pass away, Amalahem, he says to the Chachamim, Chonya bni yishamish tachzai, my son Chonya should serve instead of me as the next, should take over for me as the next Kohen Gadol.
He was the younger one?
He had two sons. One second. Hold on. Okay, so Chonya bni yishamish tachzai, Niskana bo Shimi ochiz, but his brother Shimi got jealous of him. So his brother menashtei shonu mechta, because Shimi was 2.5 years old. choices, ask the question. In that case, Taka, what are you doing appointing Konya in the first place? Mahoda usually goes to the older one. And Tosfos answers, because the usual rule is that if the younger son has greater yiras chet, and he's mamala makam avoysav, in that, in fact, the Gemara is going to go on to say, Konya didn't even know the complete seder avoysav. So he wasn't mamala makam avoysav in chachma, but he's mamala makam avoysav in yiras shemayim, and therefore he was the appropriate one. Okay. So Shimi is jealous of him because he's getting older. Omaloi, so Shimi decides to trick Konya. He says, "Boiva alamencha seder avoda. Come, I'll teach you the proper way to do the avoda. You don't have any experience. Obviously, he had served maybe as a kohen hediot, but he hadn't necessarily served. His father had been kohen gadol all this time.
For 40 years,
his father had been kohen gadol. But
how old were they?
It doesn't matter. But the point is, so actually, the verse is Tosfos says." I mean, let's learn the next two lines of the story, and then we'll talk what Tosfos says. Okay. So, Hilbishay ba'unkali. So, instead of having him dress in the real clothes of the Kohen Gadol, he puts on him an unkali, which Rashi says is a leather garment, v'chogre b'tzilzul, and he puts as a belt around it a tzilzul, which is a fancy kind of belt like women wear. Hem yidei, so on his back, and he has him standing next to the mizbeach. Like, now we're going to come, and we're going to officially appoint you. Meanwhile, Shimi goes to the other fellow Kohenim and says, look what this guy did. He made a promise, and now he made a promise to his beloved, and now he's fulfilling it. His beloved, Rashi says, means his wife. The Rambam says maybe it means his girlfriend, whatever. Anyway, the point is that he made her a promise that the day that I'm inaugurated as Kohen Gadol, I will wear your unkali and I'll belt myself with your belt as a siman of my love for you. So achutzpah, he's having such a bazillion for the Beit Mikdash. So now, Tosfos asked the question, I mean, what, he never saw his father serving as Kohen Gadol, that he doesn't realize these are not the 40 years, that he didn't realize these are not the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. So Tosfos says that he didn't know that he's coming to go into the Kohen Gadol first. Marsha explains, the vote is, he may have thought that maybe the first time a person is inaugurated as Kohen Gadol, maybe he wears these things. Afterwards, he starts wearing the regular 8 clothes. He wasn't alive when his father became Kohen Gadol 40 years earlier. They Tosfos may not have known.
Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Okay.
Onward.
Can a Kohen Gadol want a second Kohen Gadol?
Yeah, usually, yeah. Why not? And then again, first of all, usually the rule is that Shrara goes from father to son. Any position of authority among the Jewish people goes from father to son. Again, if the son is Mamala Makam Avoda. Ideally, he's Mamala B'chochma, as long as he fills his father's place. Ideally, he fills it B'chochma and the Yira. But the Gemara discusses elsewhere, there's Gemara in Ksubas, I think, that discusses about it in connection with Rebbe. That even if he's not b'chachma, as long as he's the yiras shemayim, that's good enough for him to be the one to succeed.
Obviously,
Sanhedrin had a role to play, but in this case, Shimon HaTzadik is telling them, "I believe that my son Konya is the one more worthy to be Kohen Gadol, even though he's less experienced." And I guess the Sanhedrin confirmed it. But now, wait, you have, okay. So now you have the story again, where he's wearing this weird clothing. Dikshu Achav Kohenim Lahoga, so the other Kohenim wanted to kill him. Ross McNam, so he ran away from them, but Ross Rakhrov, and they're running and they're chasing after him. Eventually, Konya wound up in Alexandria in Egypt, and he built over there in Mizbeach, the Hela Olam L'Shum Avodah Zarah, and he brought Korbanos over there in the name of Avodah Zarah. So that's one opinion. Now again, we started by saying that our Mishnah holds that Beit Konya is not a place of Avodah Zarah. This first opinion in this Braisa says that it was, that he's actually sacrificing to Avodah Zarah over there. When the Chachamim heard what had happened, what happened with Konya, Omer, they said, look at this, look at Tavachim, Mazeshala Yorah Lakach. Madach, in this case, where Shimi never even had the job yet, and he was so jealous of his brother that he made it, that he was about to get him killed, and he ended up getting him completely off the desk. Hayyotid law, a person who actually gets a position of authority, and if he's then going to be demoted from it, Allah has kama kama, how much more so that he's likely to go completely off, and therefore you should be careful not to do that. Be careful not to demote a person from a position of authority because he might go completely kalia, he might go completely back. Because here you see Shimi never even bid Kohen Gadol, and you see what his jealousy caused him to do. How much more so if he had been appointed Kohen Gadol and then, let's say, had to be demoted for some reason, how much worse his actions would have been. Okay. This is all Divrei Rav Meir. This is all what Rav Meir says was the story of what happened. Amalei Rav Yehuda, but Rav Yehuda says to him, no, that's not how the story went. I'll tell the story differently. Ella, Loy kibble olav chonya. When Shimon, yes, the first part, yes, Shimon HaTzadik said that chonya should succeed me as Kohen Gadol, because even though he's younger, he's memala makam abos abiyah. Loy kibble olav chonya. However, Rabbi Yehuda says chonya did not actually want to accept the position. So Shimon Yachav Gadol menach Sheshon Rasa, because his older brother, because his brother is older, and he felt derech heretic that his older brother should have the position. So they ended up appointing Shimi. But Alpha became the scanner by Chonya b'Shimi Ochid. Later on, after they had appointed Shimi, then Chonya started having second thoughts, and he started getting jealous of his brother that, after all, he has a position and I don't.
He was younger, fine,
but now he's kicking himself. I could have had this position, and I decided to be Mr. Nice Guy and give it away, and now I'm jealous that I don't have it. And after all, my father had said that.
I'm all right.
Well, it's a derech to be jealous of him. Okay. Anyway, so now what did he do? Because he's jealous of him. Well, how is he going to get him demoted from the position? He has to show people that he's unfit. Amaloi. So in this version, in the first version, Shimi was the knowledgeable one, and Chonya was not. So Shimi was the one who tricked Chonya. In Rabbi Yehuda's version, that was in Rameir's version. In Rabbi Yehuda's version, it's the other way around. Chonya is the knowledgeable one, and Shimi is not. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda's version, that is why Shimon HaTzadik had picked Chonya, because he's Mamala Makam Avoysav, V'chochma, maybe the Yira also, but now even a person who has Yira Shemayim, nevertheless, jealousy is a very, very powerful thing. Akin of Atzai Shabbat Kovin Metzin Atzadim in Oilam. Anyway, so now he's jealous. Amaloi, so he tells him that he's going to trick him. Boi Va'alamed Chaseidu Avoyda, let me teach you the proper way to do the Avoyda. V'il Bishib Unkeli V'chogri V'silsil, he had him wear this Unkeli and then belted with the Silsil. V'al Midiay Tal HaMizbeach, and he has him standing next to the Mizbeach. Amalahem Lachab HaKoinim, then he goes over to the other Koinim and tells them, Muru Uman Nodaz Evakirim La'alvasa, look what this guy made a promise and kept for his beloved. Oysayem Sheishtamish V'konek Dola Elvish V'Unkeli Shalichi V'Echa V'Silsil Shalichi. So now they're all mad at him. Dikshu Echav HaKoinim Lahorgoi. So now all the Koinim want to kill Shimi for the chutzpah of what he's doing in the Beth Mikdash. The difference is, Soch Lahem Kolama Oda. He tells that, unlike in Reb Meir's version, where Chonya didn't try to defend himself, he just ran off. Here, Shimi defended himself. He told them what happened. I didn't realize Chonya tricked me into it. Well, now, he says to the Koinim, Soch Lahem Kolama Oda. He tells them what happened. I didn't have any intention to degrade the Beth Mikdash. I didn't know. Bichulah with Chonya. So now they wanted to kill Chonya for doing this whole thing. Ross Mitnam, but Ross Lachrov is running away from them and they're chasing after him. Ross Lebes Amalach, but Ross Lachrov, he ran away to the palace and then they're still running after him. Kol Royo, sir, and everybody who sees him, Oim is Zehu, Zehu. Everybody's saying, that's him. Catch him. And also, Marshall says, the Zehu, Zehu means like this. Look, Shimi, after all, is the one who is standing over there with the Unkeli and the Silsil. He's saying, my brother tricked me into it. Yeah, maybe he tricked you into it. Maybe you really... No, never mind. And maybe he tricked you, maybe not. Maybe you're attacked doing it deliberately. Afterwards, when they figured out the whole truth, and Chonya is in the middle of running away, so every time, whenever, from place to place that he's running, they're saying, Zehu, Zehu, not only that's him, catch him, but also that's him, that's the guilty party. Shimi is, in fact, innocent. He was an innocent victim over here. They realize that.
Because he's still...
He would, but he didn't know. No, he didn't. He didn't know. He didn't know. No, he didn't know. He didn't know. He didn't know that an unkeli and a silsil is not the proper thing to wear. Okay.
Son of a Kohen
Gadol. Yeah, again, so Tosfos is in Marshall's point, that he may not have known what is done on the day of Kohen Gadol's inaugurated. He'd been working as a Kohen Hediot. A Kohen Hediot is one thing, a Kohen Gadol is something else. His father is wearing the eight clothes, or the regular eight clothes of Kohen Gadol, because it's not his first time.
Yeah.
As far as Shimi knows, the first time a Kohen Gadol becomes Kohen Gadol, why should he not trust his brother? As far as he knows, his brother probably has your best interests at heart. He knows these things. I don't. Okay, if he tells me to wear an unkeli and a silsil, that's probably the right thing. Anyway, but now, eventually, now when Chonya is running away, and they got down to the bottom of the matter, now they're saying, Zehu, Zehu, that's the guilty party. Get it? So eventually, Holoch La'al Sham Mitzrayim, he goes to Alexandria in Egypt, Ubana Sham Mizbeach, he built over there Mizbeach, the hell all of L'Shem Shamayim. This is another difference between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir had said it was L'Shem Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Yehuda is saying it was L'Shem Shamayim. He's bringing Karbanos for Hashem. Now, what about Shchut Shchut? What about Shchut? Chonya. Either way, Chonya. The place is called Mikdash Chonya, not Mikdash Shid. Yeah, Beis Chonya. It's called Beis Chonya, not Mikdash. Beis Josephus called it Mikdash Chonya, whatever. Beis Chonya, it's not called Beis Shid. So either way, it was Shin. Either way, it was Chonya who did it. Okay. So how is he bringing on there L'Shem Shamayim? What happened to Shchut Shchut? So, Some of the Rishonim, in fact, say, yeah, he was over, he's Poshnoi, Van Shchut Echot. The Rambam says that, Marsha says that would explain why we said before the Kohenim who served there are possible to ever serve in this Mikdash, because they were over on a very serious issue. On the other hand, Tosfos learns over here, Tosfos says maybe not, maybe he doesn't mean he was bringing his own Korbanos, he's only bringing Korbanos on behalf of Goyim. Now, we learned at the end of Zvachim that you're not allowed to do that either. If a Goy is allowed to bring his Korban anywhere in the world he wants. However, a Yid is not allowed to help him with it. A Yid is allowed to instruct him what to do. So,
like Rav
Sakra did over there with the Yid. But so some of the Mefoshim, in fact, explain that that's what Tosfos means. It doesn't mean that he actually was malayah for them. He wasn't actually over on Shechut Dechot. He instructed them what is the right thing to do, how you should check it, how you should offer it, etc.
And then he didn't do anything wrong.
Well, but still, he should be encouraging them to come to the Beis Mikdash, and still, he should be, you know, eventually you may have Yidden Nishal over there, whatever, but, yeah.
He didn't violate the letter of the law.
There's a couple of other explanations also, including there's one that a couple of the Achronim, the Son Kodshim talks about, the Orsameach talks about a possibility that maybe Rabbi Yehuda's Shitta, based on a Sifri Rabbi Yehuda, is that actually there is no Issur even to help Goyim bring Korbanos outside the Beis Mikdash. Halacha is not like that. Halacha is you can instruct them but not help them, but Rabbi Yehuda, who's the one telling the story over here, holds that you're allowed to help them, so therefore, according to him, Konya is not necessarily doing anything wrong.
And by the way, Shimmy is not short for Shimon, obviously.
No, obviously not, because Shimmy is not here. Shimmy is a separate name in Tanakh. Like, you have Shimmy Ben Gera, the one who cursed David, for example.
Yeah.
Okay. There's another interesting explanation that somebody brings, I don't remember who, that Chonya's mistake was that he thought, because we're saying there was a lesser level of Gilur Shechina in the second Beis Mikdash, and there's no Urim B'Tumim, etc., he thought it doesn't have the full Kedusha of the Beis Mikdash. If it doesn't have the full Kedusha, then you're allowed to build bombers. Okay, anyway.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, the bottom line is, he's bringing, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he's bringing Korbanos there, they're instructing the Goyim to bring Korbanos or whatever, L'shem Shemayim. Shenema, as you actually have a pasuk in Yeshaya, a nevuah about that there's going to be such a thing one day. On that day, says the Navi, there will be a mizbeach for Hashem, so not for Avodah Zarah, but to sacrifice Hashem in the land of Mitzrayim on the day when this nevuah takes place, when this nevuah comes through. So there'll be a mizbeach for Hashem within the land of Mitzrayim, umaseva etzav vulal Hashem, and there'll be a monument near the border of Mitzrayim in honor of Hashem. So therefore, Konya is being Mekayim not Nebuah in that sense. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean he's doing the right thing. He's either actually violating the letter of the law by Shechut Dechot, or at least the spirit of the law by teaching Goyim to do it. But whatever, there was the Navi a couple hundred years earlier had said it had been a Nebuah that one day this is going to happen. Josephus actually mentions that when this Chonya, he actually claims it's a different Chonya a couple of generations later, but whatever, anyway. He tells the story that when this Chonya is coming, he comes to the king and queen of Egypt to ask for official permission to set this thing up, he brings this pasuk as his proof that it should be allowed. And they're saying, look, I mean, you know, we know enough of your religion to realize that you guys consider this to be an unclean land. It's outside of Israel. But fine, if you have a pasuk from your prophet that says so, then fine, go ahead. Okay, anyway. When the Chachamim heard of all of what happened, Amru, they said, look what happened to Konya. He at first ran away from the position. He didn't want to accept it. And yet, look what happened, that his taiva for cover got the better of him, and he ended up in there, and he ended up this way. Much more so when a person is looking for a position of leadership, that they're very likely to go wrong in doing that.
How can it be the prophecy that there should be a Mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael when...
Hold on. First of all, the Gemara is going to give another explanation of it. The mayor still has to have an explanation for it, given that he says that Chonya was forever desired. But besides that, just because there's a Nebuah that something's going to happen doesn't mean that any particular person has to do it. You know the famous thing, for example, that Amman writes, if it was Nigzer by Dris Ben Abstarim, that the Jewish people are going to be enslaved in Mitzrayim for hundreds of years, then why are the Mitzrayim being punished for it? And one of the answers that Amman's own answer is because Hashem didn't say this particular person is going to be doing it. There's a Nebuah out there. There's a Gzeirah Min Hashemayim out there. Whichever person is the one who actually does it is the Rosh who deserves a punishment for it.
Well, that was not my question. My question was, we don't have the right, you didn't have the right to return to Mitzrayim.
That's fine. Yeshayah is not saying that there's a mitzvah for Jews to go to Mitzrayim and build a Mizbeach. He's saying, no, that's fine. He's saying that one day, the fact of the matter is, there's going to be somebody building a Mizbeach
Lashem. Well, he was right.
So therefore, and that's not going to happen.
It was a self-fulfilling prophecy.
No, it's not self-fulfilling. Well, according to Josephus.
If he would have done it himself, it would be self-fulfilling.
Fine, anyway.
He said it, no, but it's important to clarify. Yeshayah said it.
Okay, yeah.
It's
yeah,
self-fulfilling, because that's what he based himself on.
Fine, okay, but the
so
fact of
the future is
fine. The fact of the matter is that Chonya has the chira chokshes like everybody else does, and he made the wrong choice. And you could say the same thing. I mean, you have, for example, nevuot about Mochamot Gerga Margar. You have, nevuot of Yechezkel that they addressed in my name. And I'm going to bring you to Eretz Yisrael. So when there's a Goig, a king of Magog, does that mean he has no choice? And he's a Rasha, and he ends up making the wrong choice, and he ends up getting the punishment that he deserves. That's how it is. That's how it is in general with Nipples. Okay, let's go on. Speaking of this idea about, okay, so here we have actually two different gersos, whether the next line over here has to do with what we said before. So Tanya, Omer Rabbi Shlomo ben Fakya, the Tchila, beforehand, so according to the gears that we have in front of us, it's still talking about this idea that a person, there's a difference between a person before they accept a position of leadership and afterwards. There's a difference in their attitude towards it. So the Bishurim Fakhi is saying, B'tchila, beforehand, before I assume my position as Nasi, Kola Omel Alela, anybody who told me, go up and take on this position of being Nasi, and he coaxed him in Noisne Lepnei Ha'ari. I would be so angry at him that I would tie him up and put him in front of a lion. But now that I have the position, anybody who would tell me to demote myself, to resign the position, I would be so angry at him, I would pour a kettle of hot water on him. In other words, basically, before I had the position, I was soneh et rabbanus, as it says in Pirkei Avos, soneh et rabbanus, but now that I have the position, it's not so easy to give it up, and if somebody tried to, I would harm them. In fact, a number of them are Foshim. Say, Rabbi Gershon brings, for example, the difference is putting somebody in front of a lion is not directly killing him. The lion may or may not be hungry. Spilling hot water on him is definitely gonna harm him, maybe even kill him. So therefore, like, in other words, this is the gear set that we have in front of us. There's another gears that Rashi brings, which is not alay, but kolo oyla, but chila, which means that according to this girsa, what Rabbi Shlomo Trachi is saying has nothing to do with leadership or anything. It's saying like this. I originally had a certain idea, and now I have a different idea. When a person is making a neder to bring a korban, he should not start off by saying, he should not start by saying alai oyla or alai mincha. And if somebody would do that, I would be angry at him because it's not right to do that. You're not supposed to make nedarim because you may not fulfill. So you would tie him up in front of a lion. When a person says it properly, harei du oyla or whatever, then he did.
Then if he doesn't do it, I would
pour him a korban. Tosfos mentions over here, Tosfos brings that the girsa that we have printed in front of us in the Gemara is in fact the correct girsa that has to do with leadership, as we said, and Tosfos brings that Rav Kloinimus, the father of Ravina Meshulam, right before he passed away, and there were three places in Shas that he was Magia, Tosfos used the expression, Kimitin Nevuah, as if like he had Nevuah that this is the correct girsa. And this is one of them. Another one was in Zvach, and then another one in Shulam. That he's corrected, can be P Nivua. So the Gilus that we have in front of us is the correct Gilus.
Yeah.
Okay. Continues the Gemara, and we can see, Rabbi Shulman Prachi says, you can see there's a difference in a person's attitude to leadership before and after they assume it. Shadei Shol Baruch Mimena. Look at the example of Shol. Originally, he's shying away from the leadership. They have they have all the Jewish people gathered together, and Shmuel is going to tell them who the new king is, and they do the Urim B'Trumim and all, they do the Goyal, they find out it's supposed to be Shol, and where is Shol? Nechbel Akedah, he's hiding out. So he's afraid of taking on the position. But what happened after he's king? Vikash Lyra gets David. He wants to kill David because he's paranoid and he thinks that David is trying to take over his kingship from him. So you can see the difference in attitudes between before and after.
Yeah.
I don't know. Gemara's not
so
saying
they're planning him for becoming paranoid. They're not just considering it. Nowadays, if he was paranoid, it's a medical condition. You can't blame him for it.
Well, there is that. No, I mean, the Pasuk calls it Ruach Ra Me'es Hashem. I'll tell you, by the way, I mean, I don't want to go too far off topic, but there's a very interesting idea that Gath Sofrin says about it. to mitigate kind of what Shaul was thinking. He says, we find that Shaul had Ruach HaKodesh, right? When he was anointed, Hashem told him, and Shmuel told him, you're going to temporarily become a Navi. Even after that, he had a degree of Ruach HaKodesh. And these various attacks of his, it often says, Vakitzlach all of Ruach Hashem. But Ruach Ra made Hashem. What is it? He looked at David, and with Ruach HaKodesh, he could see that there are going to be descendants from David's line that are going to be terrible to show him and do incalculable damage to the Jewish people. Achaz, Menasheh, others. His mistake was that he wasn't looking clearly because he had it in for David. He thought that that applies to David himself, that if David himself becomes the king, he's going to lead the Jewish people down the wrong way. So therefore, that's why he's out to get him. Okay, but that's right. Okay, anyway. The point is Or Gemara is attributing it to the fact that now he's king, and once a person has a position of leadership, they think differently about it. Mind you, there's a Yerushalmi, actually, that brings this Baruch, although in the name of a different Rabbi Yeshua, and says that there's a good reason, actually. There can be a good reason to feel that way. It's not just because a person is proud of their prerogatives and whatever and don't want to give them up so easily. It's because who says that if I resign and they appoint somebody else, that he's going to be doing on the same caliber that he's going to be doing L'Shem Shemayim like I was. So therefore, there might be a justified reason to not want to give it up so easily. Okay. Fine. Okay, so now we have the question like this. Okay, Rav Yehuda explained what the pasuk "Vayomahu Yir Mizeach Hashem B'Secher Yisrael" means. It's a projection of Chonya's temple over there. That the Yid is going to come over there, and then, or it doesn't say in the pasuk Yid, but whatever. The Torbanos are going to be brought there. L'Shem Shemayim. Reb Meir, who held that that place was the Shem of Adizara, Reb Meir, high school, did Reb Yehuda Mayovidle. What is he doing with that pasuk? How does he understand what events in history that pasuk is predicting? He says, look at the time. The answer is like this. You learn in a braisa, la'acha ma'palose shol Sancheiriv, after Sancheiriv was destroyed, after his army was wiped out by the gates of Yerushalayim,
the first Beit Hamikdash.
100-odd years before the Churban Beit Hamikdash. But after Sancheiriv's downfall, after his army is wiped out,
Sancheiriv is
already the fourth time he's attacking parts of Eretz Yisrael. The three previous times he'd taken the various segments of the Aseret HaShavatim into Galus. Now, 8 years after the previous one, he's attacking again. He conquers most of Eretz Yehuda. He conquers many of the fortified cities. He besieges Yerushalayim. He's telling Chizkiah and the people over there, don't think there's any hope for you guys. I have the more powerful army. Even your Hashem can't defeat me, et cetera, as we lived in Sanhedrin. And the upshot was Pesach night, Amalek came from Hashem and wiped out the entire army. So after Sancheiriv's defeat, now danger is gone. Yotzeh Chizkiah. So now Chizkiah comes out of Yerushalayim, he's safe to leave again. Umasa bnei Malachim shayu yoshim b'kronis shel zahav. He finds over there princes of various nations who are sitting in golden chariots. These are people who maybe they've been vassals of Sancheiriv, maybe they've been allies, whatever it is. They weren't wiped out in the general thing. So now they're still there, and like where should we go from here? Our overlord Sancheiriv, our ally, whatever Sancheiriv is on, what should we do now? He did on Shalalav at Avodah Zarah. So Chizkiah made them promise not to worship Avodah Zarah anymore. No, why should he kill them? No, they, yeah. Okay, but on the other hand, now the fact. The past is after, but the point is, okay, now these guys are obviously not allied or subject to Sancheiriv anymore, so why kill them? Make something good out of them. He did them shall allow it over to love him. He made them promise. Actually, you have, by the way, there's Rashi's on Shaya and Malachim and whatever that explains. Not actually, there were some of these were actually captives of Sancheiriv. Come to think of it, you had, for example, it mentions over there. You had there was a Tirhaka Melech Kush, Tirhaka, the king of Kush, where in between, you had in the middle over there, during in the middle of Sancheiriv's siege against Yerushalayim, he hears that Tirhaka is coming out to fight him, so he breaks off the siege temporarily to go deal with the threat from Tirhaka, sends a message to Chizkiah, who don't think this is over yet, I'm still coming back for you. So the Seder Olam explains the details. Rashi brings it on the Sukkim. He goes, he defeats Tirhaka, takes him prisoner, he has a tremendous amount of booty from Mitzrayim, Kush, and whatever, then he comes back to continue the siege of Yerushalayim, then his army is wiped out. The result is that now, when he's gone and all of his army is dead, then the result is there's a huge treasure, not just from the original Ashuri, not just from the original treasure of Ashur, but now also from everything that they took as spoils from Mitzrayim and from Kush, that now the Jewish people can all take over. Anyway, so some of these people may have been prisoners of his. I mean, if they're Bekronis Shel Zahav, they're not necessarily prisoners, but whatever. Okay, anyway. He did on Shalavad Avodah Zarah, so Chizkiah made them swear not to worship Avodah Zarah. Shenema, not the Baltic. So you have a few psukim in Yeshaya over there. You have a whole nevuah in Yeshaya, capital you test in Yeshaya. And the Pasuk says, "Vayoyimahu yu chomish orim be'eretz Mitzrayim." On that day, when this nevuah comes true, there will be five cities in the land of Mitzrayim, medabrei tzfat Canaan, which are speaking the language of Canaan, meaning they're speaking Hebrew, like the Jewish people speak in Eretz Canaan. Tzfat Canaan, yeah, because it was spoken in the land of Canaan. V'nishboi tzlaHashem tzvokes, and that swear in Hashem's name, in other words, that they believe in Hashem. So we see that there's going to be places in Mitzrayim where they start believing in Hashem. Marshal points out, by the way, what's the importance of teaching them Hebrew is in order for Nishboris Hashem Tzvokas, that they're actually able to swear in Hashem's name using a proper name of Hashem rather than whatever the Egyptian term for God would be. Okay, Hochal Alexandria Hashem Mitzrayim. So these people went off to Alexandria in Egypt. Ubonu Mizbeach, they built over there Mizbeach. They're goyim. They're allowed to. The hell, of course they're allowed to. They're goyim. They're allowed to build a Mizbeach. They're allowed to build a bomb wherever they want. No, that's what it's order. He's made them swear, and after they built them, they have the hell or all of L'Shem Shemayim, and they're offering Korbanos L'Shem Shemayim. So the mayor would say that is the fulfillment of the Nevuah. Not Chonya a couple of hundred years later. Chonya comes over there and starts worshiping what it's order. These kings from Chizkiyahu's time, and Yeshaya is also in Chizkiyahu's time. So according to the mayor, Yeshaya is saying a Nevuah that's going to come true in the short term. And it did. As he says, on that day, there'll be a Mizbeach for Hashem in the land of Mitzrayim, in the middle of the land of Mitzrayim. Okay. Now the Gemara goes back to the we have the two psukim back to back over there. Vayomahu yochomish orim, and then the next pasuk is Vayomahu yimizbeach l'Hashem. So we mentioned the first half of the pasuk. There's going to be chomish orim that are nishvoyes l'Hashem tzvokas. These are the ones we say that Sancheirav made them swear to believe in Hashem and not worship anything else. Then we said the next pasuk is the one about the mizbeach. Now let's continue back to the first pasuk. The end of the first pasuk says ir haheres yeomer la'ech. The city of Heres will be said about one of them. In other words, one of them is going to be called or designated, thank you, as Ir HaHeres. So what does that mean? My Ir HaHeres, Yom HaLechos. What does that mean that one of them is going to be designated Ir HaHeres? Now the point is, HaHeres has kind of a double meaning. The word Heres means destruction, like the Horach Be'evrosa in Megillat Eicha, for example. It's also related to the word Heres, which the word Heres, you would think that cheres means earthenware, but no, that's actually in Tanakh. The word cheres, meaning earthenware, is spelled with a sin. Cheres for the samach in Tanakh is a poetic word for the sun. So therefore, the fact that the Pasuk says, for the sun, as in the sun that shines in the sky, yes. So that's the thing. So the word ir haheres can have a double meaning. It can mean the city of destruction, and it can mean the city of the sun.
Right.
So why is the Pasuk phrased it that way? What does it mean? The answer is like Rabbi Yosef explained the Targum. The Targum on Nevi'im is actually from Yonatan ben Uzziel. But Rabbi Yosef specialized in it, so therefore the Gemara often attributes it to him. So he taught the what the Targum says on that topic. It means Kauta de Beit Shemesh, the city of Beit Shemesh, the city of the sun. There's actually, in history it's known, it exists even nowadays, a place near Cairo called Heliopolis, which means Greek for the city of the sun. Kauta de Beit Shemesh, the city of the house of the sun, the Pashtus, I guess, at some point or other, the Mithraim worships the sun over there. Anyway, the Osid L'Mikra, which eventually that city is destined to be destroyed, is Amar, it will be said, that is one of the five cities. So when we said there's going to be five cities in Mithraim, that are Nishboris, Medabris, Tzfat, Nishboris, Hashem, Tzvokas, the Navi is telling us, you should know that Beit Shemesh, Heliopolis, is one of them, and that city is Ir HaCheres, and it's also Ir HaCheres that is destined to be destroyed.
Where is it,
in
Cairo?
And nowadays it's a suburb of Cairo, I think. Okay, we might, I guess like any other place in that part of the world, it's probably been destroyed and rebuilt any number of times, I don't know. Okay. We might Ir HaCheres listen to the Shibshi. Where do you see that Ir HaCheres has anything to do with the sun? So like this, Zichtiv, because you have a pasuk in Ir, Ha'omer LaCheres V'lo Yizrach, that Hashem sometimes tells the sun not to shine, like for example during eclipse or at night or whatever. The point is that we see that the word cheres, that Hashem controls the sun, but we see from that the word cheres means the sun. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to talk. So now we just described how Chizkiyahu had a very powerful influence on Eretz Mitzrayim. That now in his times and for some period of time after that, you have five cities over there in which the people believe in Hashem and are bringing korbanos to Hashem and not to Geshkes. So now the Gemara is going to talk more about the effect that the Jewish people have had on the goyim in the world, about teaching them about the basics of Elikos and about the basics of what it means, what Hashem expects of us. So First though, the Gemara is going to point out there's actually a difference between different places in Golos in that regard. You have a pasuk in Yeshaya that goes like this. Havid Bonai Merochot, the Navi says, so to speak, for like the different places in the world, the north and the south, Havid Bonai Merochot, bring my sons from far, Ubnoisai Nikseya Oreth, and my daughters from the ends of the earth. So what's the, why the double? Yeah, it means the Gola, of course, but the point is, why different places? Why are Bonai and Merochot and Ubnoisai even further out, Nikseya Oreth, don't the men and women, Lachora, are in Golos in the same place?
Right.
So Havi Bonai Meirach, which means Amar Apona, Elu Golias Shal Bavel, that refers specifically to the Jewish people who are in Golos in Bavel. Shadaitan Yeshevet Alehen Kibonim. They're more at ease among all the Jews who are in Golos everywhere in the world. They're the ones more at ease than any other people in Golos. Like, well, okay, one second. Okay, Kibonim, so therefore in that sense they're like sons. So what does that mean? Rashi says that sons are more, that boys are more at ease than girls. Rashi doesn't spell out why. The pashtus, I guess, because the boys figure they're going to get an inheritance one day and the girls aren't sure. The girls can never be sure. Then Yoda points out there's another idea in it also. When they're younger, when they haven't yet gotten married, girls are more likely to, are more apt to be nervous about what if I don't find a good chatan, what if he's mean, etc. Whereas boys tend to be more blasé about that kind of thing.
Boys learn Torah and girls don't.
That's okay. So actually, you bring up a good point, which is one of the Mephoshim that's printed in the back of the Gemara called Eini Shmuel says, why, Taka, do the Bnei Bavel have this menucha that people, that Jews elsewhere in the world don't? Because, he says, because they had to begin with their Golos, the community where they were founded by the Chorosh Lamaskir, the great Talmid Chachamim who were exiled from Eretz Yisrael near the end of the first Mishnah, and therefore it was a place of Torah. And we know it says in Pirkei Avos, it's called a Makabel all of Ol Torah, a person who accepts on himself the yoke of Torah. Ma'abir in Menor, Ol Malchus, Bel Derech Eretz, and he doesn't have the yoke of burdens of the harassment from and taxes and everything from the Malchus and from Derech Eretz. So therefore that's why that, so he says that's kind of why they died in Yeshevet Halein Tabonim, that's why they were able to be more. Because the Malchus is not on top of them, because they're Makabal Ol Torah, and therefore, as it says in Pirkei Avos, that spared them from Ol Malchus Ol Derech Eretz. Yeah. Okay.
But in Spain, they learn Torah.
Okay, but I guess there's different levels of learning Torah, and actually not so much. Actually, you know, Hachosid Yavet, one of the people who actually himself was exiled in 1492, he says very sharply that the problem was that too many Yidden in Spain in his time, he says, were too much into philosophy and not very much into Torah. Okay, yeah. Ubnois, I mean, obviously, there were tremendous Talmid Chacham among them also, but yeah, okay. Okay. Then when the pasuk continues, my daughters from the ends of the earth, Elo Golis, that means the people who are in Golis. In other lands, Shein Daitim Yeshevet Alein Tabonis, where they're not at ease, they're more like girls. So now,
more like girls?
No, the ones in Bubble are like boys, and the other ones are like girls, because the girls are less at ease.
Meaning what?
Meaning exactly that. The girls in life often have a harder time than boys do. And therefore, like this, the people in Golos and other countries have a harder time of it than Bnei Bavel do. Okay. So now, though, let's talk about the effect that the Jewish people have had on the surrounding nations. And by the way, you know, you have, for example, the very famous thing that the Rambam writes near the end of Hilchos Malachim, although you'll only find it in uncensored editions of the Rambam, but he writes that why did the Hashem's plan for history have to involve that there's going to be a Christianity and there's going to be an Islam that did terrible things to the Jewish people and all? He says, because after all, they have at least some garbled version of what Torah is about and what mitzvahs are about and what Hashem is about. So this way, at least, they have some basic concept of it in that way. When Mashiach comes, they'll have the ability to understand, okay, now what you're teaching us, it's recognizable. We understand now that the way we were taught it was distorted, but we recognize that we're able to even begin to comprehend it. Whereas if they'd remained pagans and not known of Torah and not known of anything, they'd befall out. Yeah. Okay, anyway. So, Amr of Abba Bar Yitzchak, Amr of Chista, Va'amilo Amr of Yehoda Amr Rav, Mitzur Va'ad Kautigni, from Sur until Kautigni, and hold on, we'll talk about where these places are, but first let's finish. Hold on. Makirinet Yisrael Ve'Tavim Shabashamayim. In those places, they're familiar with the Jewish people, and they're familiar with their Father in Heaven, meaning Hashem. Meaning, in other words, so Rashi says, what do you mean they recognize the Jewish people? They're familiar with the original glory of the Jewish people. They know in those places what the Jewish people were like when we were at the top, in the times of David, in the times of Shlomo, and therefore, Rashi says, therefore, they don't, they don't, they don't, Therefore, they don't make it such a burden on the Jewish people. They really rule over the Jewish people. They rule over them more lightly because they recognize the Jewish people are a respectable nation that deserves good treatment. Yeah, that deserves respect and deserves decent treatment. And therefore, also, so they recognize that Yemshad Hashemayim, Rashi says, in other words, that they rely on Hashem, and they believe in Hashem, and they don't believe in Avodah Zarah. However, from Sur to the west, and from Kartigni to the east, in those places, they don't recognize the Jewish people, meaning there are Jews living among them. But as far as they know, the Jewish people have always been a downtrodden nation. They never had experience of the Jewish people as a great kingdom, as a great empire or whatever. And they don't recognize so much Beit Avim Shevashemayim. They don't recognize so much Hashem. They believe in Avodah Zarah. Now, on the face of it, Sur and Kartigni, Sur is Tyre on the coast of Eretz Yisrael, nowadays in Lebanon, and Kartigni, on the face of it, is either Carthage in North Africa or Cartagena in Spain. And you have people who argue like that. The problem with that...
So in that case,
on the face of it, the Gemara would be saying that across half of the Mediterranean, or across all of the Mediterranean, is where Makirin is Yisrael, that's Avim Shabashmayim. There's a couple of problems with that. First of all, then it doesn't fit the geography that the Gemara is saying over here, because Mitzur Klapim Mairov, westward from Sur, is towards Carthage or Cartagena. East of those is towards Sur. So what do you mean? And so you're saying that between them, they recognize Yisrael, that's Avim Shabashmayim, and from west from this and east from this, they don't. And that's exactly, you're talking about exactly the same area.
Yeah,
so that's one problem. The other problem is if Rashi is saying the point is in these places, they know that the Jewish people are an ancient and honorable nation, etc., and therefore they don't harass them so much. I mean, in the middle, you got Rome. You can't very well say that about them. So therefore, a better explanation that some of the Achronim talk about is that maybe Kartigni over here is actually a place, someplace further east of Eretz Yisrael, someplace maybe in Babel, like by the Persian Gulf or whatever. So therefore, it would fit the geography and the Gemara here better, and it would be the idea. It would be similar to what we said before, that B'nai Babel have an easier time in Golos because the Goyim over there recognize the original glory of the Jewish people and they have a concept of Elikos. Okay.
Like Shmur Malka, we don't know.
Yeah, like Shmur Malka or whatever. Okay. Eighth day of
Shimi, but
yeah. So that would mean from Sur going to the west, meaning across the Mediterranean and any further west than that. And from the Kartigni, let's say it's on the Persian Gulf or whatever, going east towards Afghanistan, towards China, and whatever, ain't that case?
Did they know what's east and west at those times?
Of course they know. Did they know what's east and west? The sun rises in the east, sets in the west. You know where east and west is. Okay, let's go. Eighth bit of Shimi Bachiyah, the Rav. So Shimi Bachiyah, who actually was Rav's grandson, asks Rav, what do you mean? He asked him like this, not directly related to the previous thing, but like this. It is related, sorry. You're telling me that there's only a small area in the world where Makirin es Yisrael v'et Avim Shabashmayim. There's only a small place in the world where they know about Hashem and they actually believe in Hashem. But you have a pasuk that says, Mizrach Shemesh v'ad Mevoyeh, from where the sun rises until it sets, meaning over the whole world, Gadol Shmi Bagoyim, Hashem says, my name is great among the nations, and in every place there's burnt and there's offered in my, there's korbanot are burnt and offered in my name, and a pure mincha, implying that there are goyim all over the world who know about Hashem. What do you mean, only from Sur to Kachim? Amalei, so Rav tells him, Shimi at. Are you Shimi? What does that mean? Rashi gives two explanations. One is he's saying, you Shimi, such a Talmid Chacham should have such a question. Shouldn't it be obvious the answer? Or another explanation, Rashi says, Rav, as a matter of sneer, as a matter of Kedusha Vatara, would not look up. He would keep his eyes downward. So therefore, like now, when Shimi Bachiyah is standing in front of him, like he would have to ask him, is that you? Because he didn't see him. Okay, I mean, there's a bit of a problem with that. He didn't want to, but Mishum Tzniyus, he wouldn't look outside of his Dalet Amos.
What do you mean, Tzniyus?
Because it's Tzniyus, so he shouldn't be seeing things that he shouldn't, so therefore he kept that as a regular habit that he would always do that. So even now, when somebody is in front of him, he doesn't.
Like a Persian
the Persian in the time of the Baal Shem Tov, yeah. Okay, I mean, you have some Persian point out there's a bit of a problem with that, though, because in that case, then why we only find Rav ever saying this to Rav Shimi Bashi. If that was Rav's regular practice, you would have expected him to do that to somebody else also. Okay, anyway, the point is, so what Shimi asked, are you Shimi, that you should ask such a thing? The answer is the Koro famous thing, the Koro Alakoda Alakoda Alakaya, the famous thing. Throughout the rest of, from Sir to Kautigni, they know what Hashem is, or not what Hashem is, none of us really know, but in other words, they know that Hashem actually runs things in the world. Outside of those places, they know that there's an Eivish, they know that Tiparana got up in Bel, but they think that he's the God of gods. They think he's up there someplace, not paying attention to what's going on here on Earth. He's the various lesser gods, so to speak, the Rahman al-Islam, that he delegated things to. So they're answerable to him, but they run things on a day-to-day basis. That's the Goyish concept of a course, any place outside of this Mitzvah Kachim, I'll be telling him. And that's in thousands of places in Siddur that talks about this idea, that is the basic difference, that the Goyim have this concept of Alakod Alakaya, they respect Hashem, but they think that he's removed from, it's from being involved in human affairs, whereas we say, even though Roma for Goyim Avaya, Allah Shemayim Kloide, nevertheless, HaMashpili Lira, as we continue in Halal, HaMashpili Lira, it's HaShemayim Avaris, Hashem lowers himself and looks at heaven and earth, because heaven and earth are equally distant from Hashem, and Hashem is beyond all of that.
They can't see it. They're basically, the media doesn't have any influence.
Yes, basically. Okay. Fine. Now. Yeah, okay. So now continuing with, we mentioned this part of the Mizrach Shem Hashad Mubayah. So now let's explain the second part. No, well, we Mizrach Shem Hashad Mubayah, we do, yeah. But the rest of the Pasuk is actually, a Pasuk from Allah. It's an Akhtar of Pasha Tolkis. But, okay. We understand what it means, Mizrach Shem Hashad Mubayah, God Roshmi Bagoyim. We said that throughout the rest of the world, they call him Elakod Elakaya. What does the second half of the pasuk mean? B'chol makom muktam mugash l'shmi. We're saying that everywhere there are korbanos being offered to me. What do you mean b'chol makom sakadai? What do you mean there are korbanos being brought to Hashem everywhere in the world? The Jewish people can't because you can only do it in the Mishnah. The goyim and the rest of the world are not because they think alakad alakaya. What do you mean korbanos are being brought to Hashem everywhere?
No, but it's a contradiction to what we said. We said the name of Ayah is only between.
So, right. But that's the question. So we're saying in the rest of the world, it's not that they believe Hashem doesn't exist. It's just the Kodolei Alakod Alakaya. But what does that mean? B'chol makom muktam mugash l'shmi. What does that mean? That everywhere in the world, there are korbanos being brought to me. Who's bringing those korbanos? B'chol makom takadah. How could you possibly say everywhere in the world? Amr Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amr Rav Jonathan, it's not talking about actual korbanos. This refers to Talmidei Chachamim who are involved in learning Torah everywhere in the world. Hashem says, "Mala ani aleihem kilo makpiru magishim l'shmi." I consider it in their tchus as if they actually burnt and offered a korban to me. So that's what it means. So therefore, in that sense, korbanos are being brought to Hashem everywhere, not actual, not physical korbanos of behemoth, but rather korbanos of learning Torah.
Why do you mention that you're getting the theme?
Because I mentioned something else in the theme. I mean, well, yeah.
No, I know.
Okay, because there's only so much that I had time for. Okay. Then the pasuk continues that everywhere there is brought a pure mincha to me, Hashem says. So what does that part mean? It means zehalomet Torah b'kara. This refers specifically to a person who learns Torah in a state of kara. In other words, he makes sure that he's not going to be in a position that he's going to have hiruhurim. This refers, therefore, to a person who first gets married and then he spends his time learning Torah, because that way, in other words, then it's like he's brought a mincha Torah, because if he's learning before he's married, he's likely to, he has a yetzahara, he has taibas, and he's likely to not to have hirhurim that are there. Is it different in Bavel and in Eretz Yisrael? Yes. Yes, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin that there was actually a difference between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. The Gemara doesn't specify which one is which, and therefore you have different Mefarshim on it, but the Gemara mentions that it depends. In some circumstances, it's better to get married and then learn Torah, for the reason that we're saying over here, to avoid a Birhurim, because once you have passed the Salah. Well, again, the Gemara says, Halon v'halahu. It says, this for us in Babel, the other one for them in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara doesn't specify which is which. So Rashi and Tosfos argue over there which one is which. But anyway, you have one way of doing it is, like we're saying in our Gemara, to get married. That way he doesn't have Birhurim. That way, in other words, because again, even when his wife is not available to him, still, he has passed the Salah. He has he'll have the ability to again, therefore he's not so much here, as opposed to, and on the other hand, you have a consideration, you might have the problem, as the Gemara says, whether Rechaim, Tavari, the Yashik, HaTorah, is he supposed to have a millstone of Parnosa around his neck and be able to participate in Torah? Not necessarily. So therefore, in places like that, in places where a person has to work hard for a living, again, machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos, whether that refers more to Yisrael or more to Bavel, but whatever it is, in such places, better taka to do as much as possible learning before he gets married. He may have the problem of hirhurim, but the fact of the matter is after he gets married, he's not really going to have the free time to learn Torah in depth. But our Gemara is talking about the more ideal situation. That if there's not such a problem with Parnassah, and therefore he waits to participate in Torah until after he gets married, then he's bringing a mincha to Torah fashion. Another pasuk in this connection about
the... Really, and on the other hand, we say you cannot really learn Torah without being married.
No, so he's getting married and learning Torah. That's what we just said, yeah.
No.
Okay.
But if he waits...
No, that's the point. He gets married, and ideally, as the Gemara says in Kiddushin, he gets married at a fairly young age, and then, yeah, okay, fine. Then, when we say learn the Torah, we don't mean starting to learn Chumash. You do that at 5 years old. We're talking about high-level learning. Okay. Another pasuk says, it's in Shalom, we say it every night in Rider, Shiram Malas, in a both with Hashem, Kol Avdei Hashem, bless Hashem, all the servants of Hashem, Ha'umnim Veis Hashem Balelis, who stand in the house of Hashem by night, the my Balelis, why if it's Dafka by night, if we're talking about the Avodah and the Mitzvah, most of that happens during the day. This refers to Tamar Chachamim, who spend their time occupying themselves with Torah at night. The pasuk considers it important enough as if they were doing the avodah. In other words, even though the avodah itself is supposed to be done primarily by day, but learning Torah, you have Gemara's elsewhere. You have Gemara in Erevin, for example, that mentions that the whole reason Hashem created the moon was to be for people to have light to be able to learn Torah at night. The Gemara also mentions over there, and then Amram brings it in Hilchos Talmud Torah, Einonim Loimed Roi Chochma Seila B'Laila, a person learns the most of their Chochma by night, so therefore there's an importance to learning Torah by night. Some of the Mepharshim also say the idea is that you have, if we're talking about a person who has to work for Parnassah during the day, but he still takes out the time to be Oisik for Torah at night, rather than just relaxing in front of the TV or whatever, that's Kilo Asuk and Ba'avoyah, then he has a very great pull. Okay.
Well, it's not. Yeah.
Today's smartphone, indeed. Yeah. Okay. You have a pasuk in Divrei Yomim. Now, like, I'm going to douse in another pasuk. You have like in Divrei Yomim, it describes how Shlomo is getting ready to build the Mikdash. He sends a message to Chiram Melech Sir, asking for technical assistance and wood and whatever other supplies. And he mentions that I'm going to be building a tremendous Beit Mikdash for Hashem, that we're going to be bringing Karbanos. La Olam Zois Al Yisrael. He says forever this is going to be for the Jewish people. So what do you mean? The fact is, the Beit HaMikdash didn't last forever. Eventually, there'll be a Beit HaMikdash again, but how can you say, Olam Zois Ha Yisrael, as in it's something that'll never be interrupted from now until forever? It means, Amar of Gidol, Ze Mizbeach Bonri, this refers not to a Mizbeach down here on earth. This is a Mizbeach that's built up in Shemayim, Michal, Sar HaGadol, Omer du Makrav Olav Korban. And Michal, the great Malach, is standing over there and bringing Korbanos. So therefore, that's something, one second. So the point is, that's something that's constant. That's what Olam Zoi Sari Stroll. It's an ongoing thing, even when there's no Beit HaMikdash down here on it. What is he makriv? Tosfos brings two opinions. One is that what he's makriv is nishmeseihen shel tzaddikim. The neshamas of tzaddikim that are lamayla, he's makriv them tashem. And there are a number of places in Chassidus where it talks about the idea of what the deeper meaning of that is. It means, in other words, that one idea of these neshamas have gone as far as they could with their own koiches, but now Michal helps them up to the next level. And in particular, there's a number of places where it talks about the idea. A korban is the idea of bittul, being burnt in the fire and being nichol in the fire. No, I didn't.
No,
I said something else. No. I got tail of the Kim Abaya from the next piece of tomorrow.
Oh.
Okay. Again, I couldn't say everything, but okay.
You could have said everything.
Yeah, okay. So the idea is, so it talks about Siddur, there's my modern from Altadeb, and Mithil Adeb, from all the Rebbeim that talk about it, the idea that Michal brings into them a greater Bittul that they wouldn't have been able to accomplish on their own. That is Makrib Nishmasein Shal Tadidim. Yeah.
So how do you Makrib Nishamas to Tadidim?
That's what we're saying, that's what Michal does. That's what we're saying, that's what Michal does. I don't know, it's something Baruchin, but the point is also it talks about, also there's the places where it talks about the idea is that Michal being Sau Shal Chesed, Michal being the Malach of Chesed, therefore what it is he gives these Nishamas the ability to have a greater Ava of Hashem, which therefore when they're going Lamaila, then they're able to come closer to Hashem than they otherwise would have. So that's one explanation. The other explanation, Tosfos says, no, it's after 120. Yeah, the neshamas are off the mind. There's no bechira. The other explanation, Tosfos says, is that the korban that Michal brings is kvasim shel esh, sheep of fire, ruchnius like a sheep. In other words, There's a vote that's brought from the Vilna Gaon, that's based on, the Vilna Gaon explains, based on a medrash, that there's a difference before and after the Churban, that before the Churban, it was Kvasim Shal Eish, and after the Churban, it's Mishmetein Shal Tzedikim, like Hashem says, so to speak, and then the Vilna Gaon explains the idea, like Hashem is saying, after the Churban, so to speak, the only real Kedusha and Tavah that you find in the world is by Shemir Chachamim and little children. Okay, and Tosfos also mentions in this connection, by the way, that...
And not simply because we're not watching the television.
Well, yeah. Tosfos also mentions when we say every day in davening, in Rishay, we say, V'hoshav ha'avodol d'ribisecha, the ishe yisrael t'filosim ba'avos kabel. You should accept the fire offerings of Yisrael and their tefillah, v'rosim. And what are those fire offerings of Yisrael? These offerings that Michal Sarah Gadol is doing, is doing either the kvasim or the mishmetein shal tzedikim, as the case may be. Because kvasim, like the tamid, the pashas, like the tamid.
Like the tamid?
Like the tamid, I guess, yeah. Exactly, so this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, this idea that you should have that in mind when you're saying the Isha Yisrael in Rishay, and the Alter Rebbe brings it, of course, in Shulchan Aruch, in Simen Kof Chof, and he mentions over there in parenthesis, a lot of times the Alter Rebbe puts things in parenthesis that are more Alfi Kabbalah, and here's one of them, this thing that I just mentioned, that it says, that Michal gives the Tzaddikim the ability to achieve a greater Ava of Hashem, because he's the Sar Shal Chesed, that's in one of those parentheses in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch.
When we say it,
the Alter Rebbe brings in Simen Kof Chof.
Did you say that
Chaber somewhere else? No, the din is brought in the Mechaber. You should have in mind when you're saying the Isha Yisrael, what Isha Yisrael are you referring to? You're referring to the Korbanos that Michal is bringing. The Alter Rebbe adds a detail in when he writes the Talacha in his Shulchan Aruch, he adds a detail that what we mean is that Michal gives the Neshama to the Tzaddikim the ability to achieve Ava of Hashem that they wouldn't have been able to on their own. Because he's the Sar Shal Chesed, and therefore he draws down Abba into the world. Okay.
So that shows that Abba Shal Chesed is in a way higher than Abba Shal Chesed.
It is and it isn't. I mean, you have many places in Chassidus where it talks about each one has its advantages. Look, in Perek Nun of Tanya, you have an avoda that's like silver, and there's an avoda that's like gold. You have Abba to Rishpeyesh, and you have, Also, another point actually that Alter Rebbe mentions over there is, what are these, the corresponding things, those korbanos are lamayla and shemayim. What corresponds to the lamasa, the Alter Rebbe brings in another parenthesis over there is, that Michal is bringing korbanos on the mizbeach shemayla. What is the corresponding thing down here lamasa, when there's no business? That is, that tzaddikim, he says, ha'ishena korbanos shemakrivim ha'tzaddikim, the korbanos that tzaddikim are makriv, u'mosrim nafshiseyim la'kodesh baruch hu, where the mosrim nefesh Hashem, al kol dibro v'dibro ha'yosim mipihem, with every word that they say with their mouth, ha'machuna v'shem mizbeach, their mouth can be called a mizbeach. So in other words, you have, the Alter Rebbe is making a point, if not only Michal is standing up there in Shemayim and bringing korbanos, the tzaddikim down here on earth, with every word that they say to Hashem, are also bringing korbanos. And that's another thing that we mean when we say the Isha Yisrael. Okay. So that's one explanation of this law. So in that sense, it applies to a greater or lesser extent every year. Okay, so that's one explanation of La'olam Zosai Yisrael, that even when there's no Bitsi Mikdash, you still have Michal's korbanos. Rabbi Yechanan Omer, and Rabbi Yechanan says, to connect it back with what we were saying before, Eilu Temer Chachamim Ha'asukin B'Hilchas Avoida, this refers to Temer Chachamim who are involved in learning the halachas of the Avoida and the Mitzvah. Hashem says, Ma'ale Ani Aleim HaKosev, Ma'ale Aleim HaKosev, Kilim Nivnam Mikdash B'Yemen, and the Pasuk considers it as if the Mitzvah was built in their time. We know the famous thing that it says, Medrash has the expression, that any dirt that the Mitzvah was not built in their times, as if it was destroyed in their times, because that dirt could have had the ability to bring Mashiach and have it rebuilt, and they fell down on the job. But Rabbi Yechon is saying over here, the Temer HaChamim, who are involved in Tokhaz Avodah, they're the ones who are doing their part towards having the Mitzvah rebuilt, therefore it's not Kilu Nech Rabbi
Yechon. What about a simple Yid who not Tamir
HaChamim? A simple Yid is doing his Tokhaz Avodah, since Tokhaz Avodah, I mean, on a simple sense, it means the halachas of Avodah in the Mitzvah, but maybe it also includes the person who's doing a sincere avodah of any kind, Hashem. He's working on himself to do it properly. So maybe it's included in that also. I don't know. Okay. Omer Shlokish, my dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in a pasuk, Zoi Sachoda la Olalim, which we've quoted a lot of times in Zvachim and Menachos, Zoi, we say it every day in Davening, of course, Zoi Sachoda la Olalim, Mincha Balachatas la Hashem. Why the word Torah specifically? It means Kala Osek Vachoda, a person who is involved in learning Torah, Kihilu Hikrav Olam Mincha Chatas la Hashem. It's as if he brought all these Kabbalahs. However, Omar Rabba, what do you mean? Ola Mincha, in that case, it should say Zoyza Torah, Ola Mincha, meaning the Torah is an Ola and is a Mincha. So it doesn't work. Ella, Amar Rabba, no. What it means is Kola Osipa Torah, and it's Sorech, Lo Ola Vole Chasos, Lo Mincha Vole Asher. It means the person who is involved in learning Torah does not need these Korbanos. In other words, the Torah stands in place of the Ola. Talmud Torah, Rashi says, Mechaper for a person's Abed. The point, in other words, that a person, so you have Rish Lakish is saying, Kala Osef HaTorah is as if he brought a carbon, and Rava is saying that he doesn't even need the carbon because like the Torah stands in place of the carbon. Marsha explains a little bit differently. Marsha says, the vote is that Rava is saying, what do we mean, Ainit Sarich? You have the Gemara in Sota that talks about the question, Torah versus Mitzvah. What are their effects on a person? What are their effects on a person? There's magna, saving a person from doing an aveira to begin with, and masla, and protecting him from the consequences if he did an aveira. So the Gemara discusses over there that mitzvahs have the ability of masla, they have the ability to save him from punishment, but not magna, not necessarily to prevent him from doing the aveira in the first place, whereas Torah has both. The Rava is saying over here, it says Marsha, that a person is oisik, but who's oisik by Torah, doesn't need them in the sense, because he never comes into a situation where he's going to need an oilo, or a mincha, or a chatas, or an asham, or a chaper for an avera. Because Torah is magna, protects him from getting into that situation in the first place.
Ola, in our time, means
tefillah.
Well,
it
does need
tefillah. Okay, ola meaning an actual oila, of course he needs tefillah. I am, mind you, I mean, if he's learning Torah on the level of Rashi, Torah also Melsa, then Itaka doesn't need to daven. But yeah. Okay.
Well, Rashi needs to daven.
Yes, no, he didn't. Okay. Amar Rav Yitzchak, one more. Amar Rav Yitzchak, my distinct Zoyz Torah Tachatas, Zoyz Torah Tachasham. Why does he use the word Torah specifically in connection with Chatas and Asham? Means, Kala Oisik, Torah Chatas, Kila Oisik Chatas. Person learns the dinim of a Chatas, is considered as if he brought a Chatas. But Kala Oisik, Torah Asham, Kila Oisik Asham. Person is involved in learning the halachas of Asham, is as if he brought an Asham. That's what we're learning, that's what we've been learning all the time. And that's again, Marashah says, the Vort is specifically, Rav Yitzchak is talking about specifically. Rava was talking about a case where a person that the learning protects him from doing an aveva. Rav Yitzchak is talking about what if he did do the aveva. He should, by rights, have to bring a chatas or an asham. Rav Yitzchak is telling us it's as if he brought a chatas or the asham. By learning, in other words, it protects him like this. The part of the purpose, the person brings a chatas or an asham. Without that, Hashem might decide that he has to be, that aveira has to be cleaned up some other way, such as with Yisurim. Normally, the idea is the korban, among other things, protects him from that. So therefore, like this, when you don't have the korban, the person might be in danger that he did an aveira and now he's going to be exposed to Yisurim. So Rav Yitzchak is telling us that, no, when he's oisik b'toras chatas and oisik b'toras asham, it counts in place of the carbon, and therefore that now it protects him from those potential you threw him that
he also has to apply this before the carbon.
Before the
even though you could bring the carbon, but learning about it would also add.
No. It would add, again, according to Rava's, yes, because we're saying that learning gives him special protection from Hashem that he shouldn't come to do an Aveira in the first place, which by the way, we're going to learn something about that in the beginning of Poland, that's Hashem. But with Rav Yitzchak's thing, what we're saying is if he did an Aveira, no, of course, if it's in the times of the Bismarck, he packed has to bring a carbon, there's no getting around that. But
he has to be in Korban, but if he doesn't, in the time
if he learns during that time, yes, it might temporarily protect. I think some of them before actually learn that way, that yes, it might mean, Rabbi Yitzchak might mean that even during the time of the Mishnah, it might have that temporary effect. It says he still has to eventually bring the Korban, but yes. Okay. All right, we'll finish up tomorrow, Beth Dishon. We should have been able to finish today, but okay, at this point, we'll finish tomorrow, Beth Dishon. We did the Siyum on the last piece, but we didn't actually learn together. We didn't sit and learn together over here, Mishnah and the Gemara on it. So we'll do that tomorrow, Beth Dishon, and then we'll start calling.
This is the studio with Robin, where they talk about Rabbi Yosef being blind.
Which one?
In the end. I have to find
over here? No.
It's in the portion, I think.
Not on this Masechta, I don't think. You have that thing about Rabbi Yosef being blind. You have about Rabbi Yosef. You have at the end of Brachos. You have at the end of Hodeus. I don't know. One thing, since you're mentioning it, we talked before about the child woman. We said that Rabbi Yosef specialized in it. I think Rashi or Tosfos elsewhere, I think Gittin or something talks about the idea. Since Dvarim Shvichsav Yatar Asher La'omen Baal Peh, since technically you're not supposed to learn Torah Shvichsav by heart, and Rabbi Yosef is blind, therefore how is he going to learn Torah Shvichsav? Therefore he tended to specialize more in the Targum, which is Torah Shvichsav Baal Peh, which therefore he could learn, that way he could be learning Torah Shvichsav, but still not be over on that.
You're not allowed to learn Torah Shvichsav Baal Peh.
Technically not. There are exceptions for it, in particular parts of it that are well familiar to people, like Shema, for example, but then you have certain other loopholes as well. But in principle, just like originally Torah Shabbat Peh was not meant to be written down, originally the idea was Torah Shabbat Peh was not meant to be learned about that. Dvarim Shabbat Peh, Yasser Asher La'omen Baal Peh, and vice versa.
What's the union?
The union is that you have two different parts. You have Torah Shabbat Peh and you have Torah Shabbat Peh, and each one has its play, each one has its way that it's meant to be learned.
Well,
that's what we're going to be left. Cool. So tomorrow, Beth Hashem, we'll finish the Mishnah and the Gemara over here, and then we'll start calling Beth Hashem.
Sure.